Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Power of Love Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Power of Love Radio Show, sponsored by the D.D. Jackson Foundation, where we shine a light on loss and grief and how it impacts our lives. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. We believe that through the power of love, that nothing is impossible with love on your side. I am Terrell Jackson, and I'm here with my brother, Taj.
What's going on?
What's up, Taj?
Oh, there's a pen.
What's up, Taj?
Not much. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Just trying to get organized a little bit over here. I feel like there's a lot going on these last couple weeks.
Yeah, there has been. Yeah.
And I'm trying to settle in, but it seems like stuff keeps coming.
Of course it is. Yeah.
Twitter. You going to be on Twitter?
Yes.
All right. We are live on the Power of Love radio show. So if you're listening to us right now, thank you for joining us. Later on our show, we will be opening up the phone lines via Twitter, also taking questions via Twitter. So if you have questions about our topic and you want to contribute, you can tweet us at Taj.
At DDJ Foundation. Again, at DDJ Foundation.
And then you want to knock out the disclaimer?
Yeah. You didn't do the phone number, though. You said you can call us. The phone number, the call-in number is 323-203-0815.
Again, that's 323-203-0815.
All right, and here's the disclaimer. We are not licensed therapists. We are just ordinary people who have experienced loss in our lives, have been impacted by it, and have learned from it. And we want to share our... Yeah, I was doing so well, too. And we want to share our opinions in an attempt to help you overcome what you are going through. Saying that, if you need help, professional help, Saying that, if you need professional help, we urge you to seek it and find it. Don't just rely on us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
How was your week?
Week was good. I apologize for not being there last week.
Oh, you weren't here last
week.
Yeah,
my sister-in-law got married.
That's right.
Yes, I was at a wedding. So, congratulations, Thaisa and Mark.
That's right. Congratulations. Yeah,
so that's where I was.
You weren't here.
Huh?
I forgot you weren't here.
See, am I that forgettable? No. Mm. But yeah, so that was, because I always think what happened last week, you know, that
right.
I could talk about. So that was one of the major things that happened. And yeah. Parent-in-laws are in town, so that was great.
Oh, okay.
They still are. But
that's
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
How's fatherhood?
Fatherhood's great. Now she's in the stage where she's eating vegetables or,
difference.
You know, mushy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're at that stage right now, but
you got a lot of stages to go.
It's funny because she actually, we watch American Idol still, and she loves watching it. I don't know I kid you not, like, watches it. Yeah, it's the singing and everything like that. Like, she'll turn
the lights.
Yeah, it's the colors and the singing.
Oh, that's
it's
nice.
Like a perfect blend, but she knows what it is, and she loves watching it.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
My week was, felt like a lot. It's been mostly baseball, obviously. I released a song.
Yeah.
That's probably what was the big news for me. I released a single.
You forgot that?
Yep. And I got, I released it on the 8th, April 8th. And I got a album coming out on the 21st of April.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing that. And then baseball as well. So quite busy. But baseball music. That's my life.
Yeah.
All right, so we have a guest on our show, and today's topic, again, call in. We want you to call in. I'm going to give you the number one more time. It's 323-203-0815. Call in and contribute to today's topic. Today we're discussing negative thought patterns in everyday life and when dealing with loss, and we are joined. Thank you for joining us. Tiana Mundaka.
Yes.
Tiana Mundaka, licensed psychologist and certified cognitive behavior therapist.
Ooh, I like
that. Right. I get that right?
Yes, you did.
Yes. So
thanks
thank you
for having me.
And before we start getting into the topic, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, she's...
You didn't tell me it was your birthday.
No, I didn't.
No, you did not. And
nice birthday,
we've known, I've known you for
almost five, six, 7 years. Yeah. Since
our kids
were in preschool together.
And your husband and I, we coached.
Together.
We coached our kids together.
And Terrell's an awesome coach. We were on the Dodgers.
Yeah. And you're from L.A.
Yes, I am.
So you're a Dodger fan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all Dodger fans here.
Born
they're doing well this year.
Yes, they are.
They've been playing the last few years. They've been good, but we got to get over the hump.
They're awesome.
But thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I didn't realize it was going to be your birthday.
No, this is a great way to celebrate.
Okay.
I really appreciate the Dee Dee Jackson Foundation and what you guys do. I think it's awesome.
Thank you. And yes, you've been very supportive, and you come to our DDJF Costume for Cause.
Yes.
And you enjoy the mazes.
I do.
Yeah, take big pride in the mazes.
We always go through the mazes together.
Love going
through it with there. Yes. But yes, you've been very supportive, and we thank you guys for that.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So today we are discussing negative thought patterns.
Yes.
What is that? What does that mean?
So negative thought patterns, everyone experiences them. No one is immune to having negative thoughts. And basically what they are, they're automatic thoughts. And what that means is they're thoughts without intention. And so when we think about thoughts, the funny thing is most people don't realize that we have an estimated 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts throughout the course of the day.
Dang.
Yeah, a good portion of them tend to be negative. Yeah, right. It's a lot, right?
Yeah.
A good portion of them tend to be negative. A lot of the times we're not aware of it, and some of the times we are. Other times we pay attention to them, and sometimes we don't. So having negative thoughts is completely normal. A lot of times people come into therapy when I had a private practice.
Mm-hmm.
I worked with a lot of adults dealing with anxiety and depression. And they just wanted to get rid of these negative thoughts. And the idea is that we're not trying to do that because they're quite normal. The only difference is when the person focuses on the thoughts and they put a special meaning to the thoughts that makes the difference.
Mm.
Because it then affects the person's mood, which then may affect their behavior.
Mm. Yeah, we were talking earlier before the show started. And you corrected me because I said, how do you get rid of the thoughts?
Right.
And you said, you don't get rid of them. You manage them.
You manage them.
That's right. That's a great point. Mm. And you had your practice for?
I had a private practice in Calabasas for 10 years.
Yeah. How was that?
That was great. It was a great experience. But right now I'm doing more administrative work in the field of psychology. So I'm doing more indirect services. But before that, I was working with children, adolescents, and adults in community mental health settings, school settings, and in private practice.
Is there a major difference when you're working with children compared to adults? I mean, obviously, adults and children have different experiences in life, but is there a major difference working with them?
Well, I would say the major difference would be in terms of how you work with kids, and that's really through play or through art or even through music, as you guys have brought up before. Uh-huh. So in that way, it's different. But with my adults, sometimes we would, do some art together. With some adolescents, we would play games together. So I would say, there are some differences in that respect.
I'm sure this is a situation where every case is different. But does it seem that maybe it's harder for adults to change because they're more set in their ways compared to children that are just still developing? Or am I off on that?
You're correct in that as adults, we develop beliefs throughout the years that become strong belief systems. And that's how we end up navigating our life. So in that way, it can be difficult to make changes. But most of the time, if you're motivated to make changes, then it's not as hard.
Right.
What made you want to go into this field?
Well, it's interesting because, people ask me this question, ever since I was young, people just sort of naturally shared their problems with me.
Yeah.
Families, friends, strangers. We would start off with a conversation and then they would go into telling me some things they'd never told other people. So that was one thing that I noticed. The other thing that I noticed is that, you know, I can remember when I was 14 years old, holding a family meeting to discuss a problem that we were having. You know, because I always believe that, hey, we can resolve the issue if we just sort of talk about it and respect each other. So that's kind of how I got into the field of psychology. It was sort of a natural transition like into what I do. Great.
That's interesting, because when you mentioned that you're that type of person that everyone would go to and discuss their issues or just talk to, it says a lot about you. But it's interesting because I know Louie's wife, Mara, she was the same type of person where you just felt comfortable going to her, and a lot of people did, and she ended up being a therapist as well. So I thought that was just very interesting. I never really thought about that before. All right, so negative thought patterns, where are they coming from?
Okay, so like I mentioned to you, they're pretty automatic. I'm sure if you really thought about it, maybe you could think of some negative thoughts that you already had today. I know I have. but I think what's important to keep in mind is that there's certain types of negative thoughts out there. And part of managing these thoughts is being able to label them. So I thought it would be a nice idea to just share with you some of the more common negative thoughts that are out there. And for your listeners out there, if you Google cognitive distortions, because that's another name for negative thoughts, you'll see that there are many different kinds out there. At least 20 will pop up.
Wow.
But for today, we'll just talk about a couple of common ones. One of the common ones is black and white thinking.
Okay.
So that's when you see things in black and white categories as either or. So something is either good or bad, right or wrong, all or nothing. And so,
basically, there's no gray area. It's either black or white.
That's the point. When you're engaging in that type of negative thought pattern, you tend to forget that there's a lot of gray. There's shades of gray in between. So if a person's performance falls short of perfect, they may think that they're a total failure. Okay. And then, if we're talking about loss, whether that's a loss of a person, a pet, a job, loss of through death or divorce, you may feel that without this person, life is meaningless. So that's a type of all or nothing thinking.
Sounds like it's extreme.
It's extreme. So if you find yourself thinking those types of thoughts, it's important for you to challenge yourself and ask yourself, what would the gray be like?
Okay.
What would the gray be like? Is it really that bad? What would it look like if it wasn't so extreme?
Okay. I like that one.
You like that one? Yeah. We all do it.
Yeah, we all do it, and I'm definitely guilty of it.
You're very guilty of it.
Thanks, Hosh.
You're welcome.
I like that. Black. So that one's called black and white, basically.
Black and white thinking.
Okay.
So thinking in extremes. Another one. Should I go on?
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
Okay. Another popular one is should statements. So that's when a person sets expectations that are unrealistic for themselves and for others. So what might that look like? I must lose weight in order to be attractive.
Okay.
I must be early for the meeting. With other people, you may say, they should thank me for all the things that I'm doing. So as you can imagine, when you have that sort of thought process, it kind of sets you up for failure.
So these are things that you're putting on yourself.
Right, or putting on others. Put it on others and they don't meet your expectations, then you're going to experience, frustration and anger with that person.
Okay.
And that's really unfair to do.
So it's the should. It's expecting. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, these are good ones.
Yeah. And then so when we talk about loss, What's common with loss is that people often say, I must pull myself together. Mm. I must get back to the routine and stop crying.
Why do people feel that way?
Because they put this high expectation on themselves that they need to present a certain way, perhaps.
It's interesting.
Yeah. No, yeah. I must be strong, or I must.
Exactly. And so when you do that, again, it sets yourself up for failure on that one, because who says you should?
Yeah.
Is it because life keeps going that they feel that they need to keep going and just get right back on it?
Right. It really depends on the individual. Mm-hmm. So if they were brought up believing that they need to present well, well, then I need to get myself together.
Right.
You know, or whatever the circumstances for the person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know when our mom passed, it was like in my head, I kept hearing her say, you're the older brother, you know, be strong for them.
Exactly.
Because we all had different.
We had different roles and stuff like that. And she always would say, take care of your older brothers in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like that was always flashing in my head to the point where I didn't properly grieve the way I should have, because I was more focused making sure that they were okay in that way. So I understand that.
Right. And that's a perfect example of, you know, that type of thinking. It's also very common with survivor's guilt, you know, and I just wanted to touch on that because of, you know, the recent mass shootings that we've had. And so a lot of times, you know, people have the thoughts of, if they were involved in it, you know, that person died and I didn't, you know, I should have died, or I should have been the one to do something, or I should have done something different. So it's very, very common. And I can share with you personal experience in relation to my husband. And he said it was okay to share this. My husband actually recently lost a friend in the Thousand Oaks Borderline Grill Bar shooting. Mm-hmm. And he was a friend of his. They worked together. They're both veterans. And my husband started to develop thoughts of, you know, I should have made an effort to see him more often.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should have participated more in the veterans organization. So that, of course, triggered, you know, a tremendous amount of guilt.
Yes.
You know, and so it's really hard. It's really hard. And when we, you know, these, like I mentioned to you, these negative thoughts are normal, but if they're left unchecked, they can turn into depression or anxiety. They can turn into something else more serious.
Right. I've talked about this a lot. With loss, I feel there's always guilt. Well, I shouldn't say always. At least for me, there was always guilt. With my mom, there was a little guilt there. And I think it just comes from us thinking that had we done something different, we could change the outcome. Mm-hmm. And when I lost my friend, our friend David Strasia, I had that same type of, I had some kind of guilt, same thing, you know. But I think it's just, I think maybe because now that they're gone, you can't do it. You can't do what you wanted to do or you should have done, you know, and that causes the guilt. But I always ask people who have lost if they experience guilt, you know. But it's a common characteristic, I guess, when going through loss and healing.
Sure. And it definitely ties into this type of should statement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should have done more. I should have been a better, you know, partner. I should have been a better parent. I should have been a better, you know, and it can go on and on and on and on and on. So when you're, you know, experiencing this type of thought pattern, you know, it's important to challenge that. And ask yourself, you know, who says I should? Where does it say that I should? You know, and be very kind and loving towards yourself, because there's a lot of factors in life that we can't control, you know. And so to give yourself that love and that kindness and acceptance.
Because it's very easy also to fall into the trap where you're hard on yourself.
Oh, absolutely.
Because other people will put the should on you.
Right.
And you, then you start to feel like you're it's almost then you start to go into the black and white thinking
mm-hmm.
that if you don't hit a certain mark or do a certain thing to a certain level, that it's, you know, you go into the extreme thing. So I see how this can all compound.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly.
And this is all called distortive.
It's called negative thoughts, but also cognitive distortions.
Cognitive distortions. And you'll get it eventually.
Right. And so, you know, it's when we say cognitive distortions, it's really not in reality to what's actually happening a lot of the times.
Got it.
Mm. Okay. We have more?
Sure. Do we have time for more?
Yeah, we have. Yeah.
Plenty of time.
This is great. I'm loving it.
Can I stop you real
yeah.
quick? Because we do have a question from sure. one of the listeners. So I do want to get... as I said that now, okay. She says, I guess I should say who it is.
Yeah, say who it is.
Marlene says, I feel frightened by my reaction to the death of my parents in the future because I have a rather bad and painful relationship with them. I am really worried about my future psychological condition when they die.
Sure. That's a very common thing to have happened with people who don't have a good relationship mm-hmm. with a person. And there's this fear of like, oh, my gosh, the regret or
yeah.
what could have been. So I want to say that that's normal mm-hmm. To the listener. That can be a part of jumping to conclusions mm-hmm. In that you are basically prophesying that you are going to feel this way. And the truth is we really don't know how we're going to feel.
Mm.
But there are things that you can do in the meantime. And it's just basic problem solving in that, you know, start brainstorming on things that maybe you can do about the relationship, whether it's directly or indirectly.
Mm.
You know, you could do the work on your own. Like maybe if you wanted to see, you know, a therapist who could help you and support you through that.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, you know, brainstorm on some problem solvings that you can do directly with your parents. But, you know, fear of losing people we love is very normal.
Okay. Love that.
I have a question.
Yes.
Can anything be worked out? Or are certain things just supposed to be? Or are certain things not supposed to be? Like, can you work out, let's say there's a friction in a relationship. Family, boyfriend, girlfriend, or brothers, or whatever it is. Is there always an opportunity to work that out? Or sometimes it's just meant to be left alone? Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I want to say the answer is yes to both scenarios.
Okay.
I mean, I think it really depends because it needs to be reciprocal.
Mm,
you know, it can absolutely work itself out. But both people have to be on the same page.
They both have to want to make
both
it work.
Want to have to make it work.
Both have to want to win. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Literally.
So what kind of advice would you give to someone?
Well, can I just interrupt mm-hmm. you real mm-hmm. quick? And just to say, you know, there are definitely times where it's healthier for a person mm-hmm. to walk away from a relationship.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You yes. know, so, you know, just know that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry,
that's
go
a
ahead.
Great point. No, that's a great point. my question was, what would you say to the person that's trying to mend something? Like, for instance, I forget.
Marlene.
Someone like Marlene, let's say she wants to mend whatever friction.
And she didn't
is.
State that. Maybe.
Oh,
she
didn't?
No, she just says that she has a bad relationship.
Okay, I'll use someone
but
else.
But let's say she did. Let's say she did. Let's.
Okay, so I'm just saying, what happens if someone like that is trying to mend something, but they're not getting it from the other side? What advice would you give somebody like that?
Yeah, and that's really hard because we so desperately want things to work out, and it's hard when you're ready and the other person is not. And really, it's about being able to accept that, and it can be very painful, but you will survive it. You know, it's accepting the fact that, you know, maybe right now is not a good time for mm-hmm. that person. You know, I put my best foot forward in trying to make it work out, but they're not ready, and mm-hmm. we need to be respectful of that.
That sounds like it's a lot easier said than done.
Oh, always. Always, always, always. But, you know, life is...
Yeah.
It's not easy, right?
Right.
It takes a lot of practice and, mm-hmm. you know, it can be tough.
Yeah.
And that's what I, you know, love about cognitive behavioral therapy. It's really about learning how to create a more balanced thought process. And it's not that we're trying to replace all the negatives with positive. Affirmations are great. I mm-hmm. love them. But it's not about replacing all the negativity with the affirmations. It's about acknowledging that, you know, this situation really sucks,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's the truth. However, X, Y, and Z, you know, it's about coming up with a more positive thought process.
So the negative thoughts and patterns and all that, they're always going to be there. If you get rid
always.
Of one and stop another, there's going to
yeah,
be something
absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely. I probably had about, you know, I don't even know how many negative thoughts I've had since I woke up, you know.
Right.
So it's about, you know, either, like I mentioned to you, you either pay attention to them or you don't. I mean, there's different strategies that you can use. I know a lot of people practice mindfulness.
Mm.
And so it's the idea that you allow your thoughts to enter and allow them to leave. You know, so you're not putting a whole lot of importance on them. So that's one strategy. And the other one is through, like what I've been mentioning to you, it's called cognitive restructuring. It's about challenging these thought process so that you can come up with a more balanced one.
And how do we challenge them?
So it really depends on what kinds of thoughts you're having. One of my favorite things to do is just think of yourself as being your own detective. So you write down the evidence to support the thought and the evidence to not support the thought.
Mm.
And again, like people ask me, like, what do you mean? You're asking me to like tell you evidence that would say, you know, the reason why I'm having these negative thoughts mm-hmm. or the reason why it would be true. Yes. Because we're coming up with a more balanced thought process. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Because you got to recognize it.
You know, weighing the pros and the cons is another one. You know, and doing your own reality testing. Another thing that you can do is ask somebody that you trust to what would they say to you okay. about this thought? Ask yourself, if somebody close to you was experiencing this thought, what would you say to them?
Mm, like that one.
What about the people that have thoughts and they go to others hoping that they'll give them what they want to hear
uh-huh.
and they keep going to people trying to get what they want to hear
oh.
back?
Mm-hmm. We call that reassurance checking.
Okay.
Reassurance there's checking. A name for that.
Oh, there you go.
You know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, seeking support from people that you trust. But when you start to depend on it, then it turns into something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's not really coming from you anymore.
And then how about if you go to people wanting a certain answer and they're not giving it back to you? So you go elsewhere and you keep looking for the person that will finally say yes.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the person would realize that, you yes. know, they need to really look to, you know, inward,
yeah.
you know, and work that out if they're not
right.
getting what they want.
All right. Do you have more or?
I do have a, okay. yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah, go ahead. A couple more and then I wanted to ask you a few things.
Okay, sure. Another one is catastrophic thinking. And we've all done this. And this happens when a person sees an unpleasant occurrence as the worst possible outcome or scenario. So when we talk, you know, I'll just give you a basic example. If a person fails an exam, they may automatically think that they're not going to pass the entire course.
Mm.
You know, so when we think about loss, what I've seen common to that is the idea that, you know, with not having the person in my life anymore, I'm not going to be able to function emotionally, financially, and socially.
Mm.
And their thoughts may go to, you know, I'm going to end up in the streets. And that could be with losing a job, losing a home to a fire, going through a divorce, et cetera. Ooh, you know, so yeah. it's very easy for people to go down that road.
Almost like a downward spiral.
Right.
Way. Yeah.
Exactly. Again, you know, basic problem solving with that one, you know, mm-hmm. recognize that. And most of the time when people are engaging in this type of thought pattern, they recognize it because a panic sets in.
Oh.
You know, and all of a sudden the behavior is to like try to stop it at all cost.
This is from good stuff, but I can relate. Unfortunately, I can relate to a lot of these. Okay, it makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. So start with writing down the fear and again, brainstorming on what you could do about it. Uh-huh. And then, you know, through the writing, I promise you, you'll realize it's probably not that catastrophic after all.
Right.
And there are things that you can do to address the fear that you're having.
So a lot of, even with this one, a lot of it is you're putting it on yourself.
Yes. Well, again, it's your own negative thoughts and it's the meaning that you're attaching to it.
Yeah. How many more do you have? Or is that it?
I can do one more.
Sure.
Would you like me to do one more?
Yeah. Yeah. I like these.
Okay. Another one is disqualifying the positive. So that's when you reject a positive experience by insisting that they don't count. So a lot of times, you know, if somebody says, oh, great job on your performance, you'll hear the person say, yeah, but, you know, it's that yeah, but person. Yeah, it was good, but I messed up on this, you know.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of loss, I saw this a lot with caretakers. Of people who were taking care of loved ones that were, you know, terminally ill or sick and ended up, you know, losing them. You know, people would say, you know, you did a great job. You were there for the person. Yeah, but I could have been there more.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, but I could have done a better job. You know, so that's a pretty common one for people. So with that one, it's important to write the evidence to support that thought and not support that thought. And then more than likely, you're going to, you know, recognize through writing that you did quite a lot.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of positive things going on.
That's all very important stuff. And like you said, this is, you said 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts.
That's right.
Most of
roughly.
Them.
Yes.
Not most of them. I shouldn't say most of them negative, but a lot of them.
Those are the thoughts that we have throughout the course of the day.
Of the day, yeah.
Yeah, from thoughts that don't mean much.
Right.
You know, like, oh, look at the dog down the street.
Right,
you
right.
know,
that's a lot of thinking.
To negative. That is a lot of thinking.
Yeah. So it's very, obviously, it's very important to be aware of your negative thought patterns. Taji, you have something?
No. There's a lot that resonates, but luckily there's a lot that doesn't in a way because – I'm more, I don't know, maybe it's a protective mechanism, but I don't put a lot of weight and guilt on myself. I don't know why. I've always been like that in terms of, but at the same time, I think I recognized it early because I was like that growing up in high school. I was very negative on myself. And then I actually just, it's almost like relinquishing control and then saying, okay, I can't live like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I went completely the opposite in terms of where it, I mean, obviously I know there's extremes, but I started seeing in gray, as you said, black or white.
Right.
It was like me, it was all gray, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't want it unless it needed
the way.
You've
always been that way?
No, that was after high school. Cause
right.
Because high school, I was my worst enemy.
That's what I was about to say.
And then, you know, as you saw with baseball,
right.
I would
that's
strike out and throw my bat and everything.
Like
oh, uh-huh.
he was terrible.
I was, and even in high school baseball, I was my worst enemy. Like, everything fell on my shoulders in terms of, like, if I got out.
Put
like
a lot of pressure on yourself.
I put a lot of pressure on myself, and I said, I can't live like this. Like, this is not healthy.
Right.
And it took away baseball, which is one of the most fun things that I had experienced, but mm-hmm. I look back at it, I was like, I didn't really have fun during that time period because I was more calculating
mm-hmm.
averages, like
yeah.
you know, like
you were more in your head.
Yeah, I would get out and I'd be like, okay, now
yeah.
where's my batting average now? I, you know, and even with 3T with performing, it's like it was all in my head. It was like it was the yeah, but you know,
mm-hmm.
you did well. Yeah, but I messed up here. Yeah, but you know, could have done better.
Right,
and so. I learned that earlier on in my life, you know, halfway, I guess, 21, 22. But it was a lesson that was not good to learn because, I mean, it was a lesson good to learn, but I wish I would have learned it earlier because
yeah.
I went through my whole high school and early 3T career not being satisfied, not being happy with where I was. And now mm-hmm. I look back and I have happy memories. I'm like, oh, I did well, or, oh, you know, I was a good person. But mm-hmm. back then I didn't think that. So now I'm kind of overcompensating.
Right. But what a gift to give yourself to be able to pull yourself out of that. That's yeah. huge. Yeah. That really
well,
shows
just
to your strength.
It had to be. Yeah. That's the thing. At some point it was got to that point sure. where like when you start not liking yourself, mm-hmm. you have to either turn it around.
Right. Well, yeah. like I mentioned to you earlier, if left unchecked, yeah. these thoughts can turn in, and these thoughts and behaviors can turn into something more significant, like yeah. depression and anxiety.
Yeah.
So you really, you checked yourself.
Yeah, I definitely checked myself.
You checked yourself.
Yeah, and so that's why a lot of those are, I can see I had those in the past, but luckily, mm-hmm. and there's still some that I'm still dealing with. I'm not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We all deal with these.
I was going to say, yeah. We should.
Every single one of us.
Right. So once we recognize these negative thought patterns, what do we do with them?
So, I mean, that's really the first step is being aware.
Mm.
That's huge because right there, it, you know, it helps you start to make the changes that you want. So it's being able to be aware of yourself. Notice when you're starting to have more anxiety or low mood, or if your behavior is starting to change, like, okay, what's going on with my thoughts? Like pay attention to them in a way that you can start labeling them in that, okay, that there's the black and white, there's the mm-hmm. black and white, you know, mm-hmm. how can I, you know, work through this? And then you start to do the different types of, and there's a lot of strategies, too much to go into,
mm-hmm.
but like I mentioned, it's cognitive restructuring. So it's coming up with a more balanced thought process. It's also being kind to yourself, practicing mindfulness mm-hmm. as well. You can do that. Finding support, you can do that. And then the next thing to do is reevaluate. You know, you practice.
Right.
You know, it's not going to go away. It's not going to change right away, but you practice and you reevaluate where you're at. Like, mm-hmm. okay, you know, I'm noticing that these types of things are not bothering me as much as they used to, you know, because you're doing the work.
Right.
You know, so self-care is huge as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
it's important and we all forget about that in our busy day to day. But, you know, take the time for yourself to do some self-care as well.
Because a lot of this, depending on how old you are, but for me, Taj, I'm sure like you said, you were 20 years in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not something that you get rid of overnight or.
Right.
That just turns off and all of a sudden you're cured. It takes time, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. And if your listeners are curious, because this is just a small part of cognitive behavioral therapy. If they're curious about it, they can go online and check out a couple of websites.
Okay.
That I can give later.
Yes.
Or, okay.
Yeah, we'll post something up.
Okay.
We still have some more time. I wanted to, we spoke about it a little bit. I want to talk about loss.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever dealt with loss?
Yes, I have.
And yeah, when did you first experience loss?
Well, like yeah, I mean, it's interesting for me because most of my loss occurred when I was younger, my high school years.
Oh, wow.
I mean, recently I lost my grandmother 5 years ago, but the loss that I think of that's very strong in my mind was during high school because it happened to younger people.
Mm.
You know, I lost a friend to a car accident, another friend's little sister to cancer, and another person to suicide. So, you know.
This is in high school?
This is during, most of it during high school.
Right, right.
One of them happened probably in my early 20s. But my grandmother's passing was more of the normal kind that you would
right.
think, you know. And so I had a lot of support with that.
Do you remember how it affected you?
Oh, yeah. And that's part of the reason why I'm talking about this topic today. Do I have time to share?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So when I was in high school, and I'm going to relate this to cognitive behavior mm-hmm. therapy because this is how I connected the dots when I went to graduate school. It kind of clicked for me what was going on with mm-hmm. me. During high school, my sophomore year, I had a friend who we both went to a religious school, and she had a strong faith. And she would often say to me that she was not afraid to die, and that she knew she would go to heaven. And as a teenager, I thought, wow, that's interesting. You know, you don't usually hear that from other teenagers, but she had a very positive disposition. She was comfortable with her life. And then she lost her life in a car accident. She took off her seatbelt for a minute to grab a deck of cards when she was on a family trip, and the car lost control, and she lost her life. So at first, you find support with your peers. Mm-hmm. When there's a loss, you just want to be around your friends, mm-hmm. you know. So we didn't necessarily talk about the loss or the circumstance of the loss, but at that time it was fine because I worked through it with my just hanging around friends. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, I started to recognize that I had a fear of death. Mm. Talking about death, I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to hear about it. I avoided it. To the point where it started to translate into me feeling worried about family and friends. Mm-hmm. You know, what if something would happen to them? And it wasn't until my graduate training in psychology that I connected the dots that I had engaged in some should statements, you know, where I should avoid talking about death, because if I'm comfortable with it, in any way, shape, or form, it may come to me, or it may come to somebody that I love, you know? So it really, it just connected the dots for me all those years, and, you know, really had to work on myself on that one, challenge that thought process. Well, first be loving and kind to myself that, you know, I understand why this sort of developed, and I didn't check myself because I was a teenager. Mm-hmm. And, started to challenge my thoughts in looking at, you know, others who talk about death and they're still breathing and they're still thriving, you know. Then I started to challenge myself by talking about it. So just that I would start collecting evidence that nothing will happen to me.
Yeah.
Right.
And the other part is just accepting the fact that we don't have control over life, and that death is a natural part of life, and, you know, you simply can't live that way in fear, because you're missing out on a lot.
Right.
You know, so that was my experience. That's always stayed with me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's pretty big.
Yeah.
It's pretty big, and just when you said it all connected, it's amazing how something can happen to you so young, and you can carry it throughout your whole life.
Oh, absolutely.
You know.
It can manifest in different ways. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of the things that I want to mention is that when we talk about the stages of death and dying, you know, everyone's familiar with Kubler-Ross's stages of death and dying. I don't know. Are you?
Maybe? I'm not.
Oh,
no.
Okay. So there's five stages of death and dying. And you could apply it to anything. You could even apply it to parents who find out that the child has special needs, because it's sort of the loss of the idea that your child of the idea of your child, of what you thought your child would be like.
Right.
You know, so they go through these stages, in no particular order, but denial, bargaining, anger, depression, and acceptance. But I would like to add that anxiety should really be a part of that.
Yeah.
Because as you could see, that's how it manifested in me.
Right.
You know, it really turned into a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
That's a lot. I think if you leave things, well, in your situation, you weren't aware.
No,
right?
For many years I was not aware, but it just, like I mentioned, if you leave these negative thoughts unchecked, they start piling on top of each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it started off with, oh no, get away from me. I don't want to talk about death. Like, you know, avoid it, run away from it, just stay away from me. And then it sort of translated into, and I'll share this with you, because I think it's good for people to know. Maybe people can relate. But if I would hear an ambulance in the street, you know, I'd immediately call my family member to make sure that they were okay.
Yeah.
Because for some reason, my distorted thought process was like, could this possibly be them involved in a terrible car accident or something bad happening.
It's very interesting. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because I had similar stuff like that, you know, even pre-mom passing, just in terms of.
Really?
Yeah. It was almost like my worst fear was someone close to me passing. So when mom passed, it actually did the opposite, because then I didn't have that fear anymore, because I had to live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was almost like a, not like that was the worst thing that could have happened to me, and it happened.
Right.
So mm-hmm. like everything else is now on a different scale.
Right.
So
yeah,
this is very interesting though. Thank you for mm-hmm. sharing all this.
Yeah. You're welcome.
With
yeah.
us.
So it's cognitive distortions. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Right?
And it's commonly, it's negative thoughts, cognitive distortions. Yes.
So, I'm just going to go over them again. So there's the black and white thinking, right?
Yes.
And that's basically, there's no gray area. It's
either all good or all bad,
hot
right or
cold.
Wrong. Hot or cold, exactly. Yeah. Perfect.
Yep.
Not
yep.
perfect.
And then we have the should behavior,
mm-hmm.
which is expectations.
High expectations that you place on yourself and others.
So we put them on others. Does it sometimes come from others on us?
Oh, for sure.
And we feel that we have to step. Yeah, the same thing, I guess I'm saying, right? I'm
yes.
just saying it differently.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Then there's the catastrophic thinking.
Yes.
Where it's like the end of the world type of.
Worst case scenario. Yeah.
Like
you
if
just
I don't
really
do this,
go there.
I'm gonna, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to lose my job. I'm going to be out on the streets, and it just sort of tumbleweeds.
Right. And then the last one I think we talked about was the disqualifying the positive.
Right.
The yeah, but.
The yeah, but. Yes.
I got them all?
You did. I think you did. Yeah.
I had four.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't five?
Oh, was there five?
I do have five. I don't think we talked about
one. Yeah, we have like four more minutes. We can
four
talk
more
about
minutes?
The last one, yeah.
Okay.
You have a fifth?
I do. Overgeneralization.
Mm.
Okay. And so that's when a person may come to a conclusion based on one or two single events and apply it to their life moving forward. So, you know, an example of that in terms of loss is a person who was very connected to a person that they lost, whether it's through divorce or death. And then they infer that, you know, anyone that they love or connect with, they're going to lose moving forward. So then typically what happens is that person starts to avoid making connections to avoid that sort of pain, because now you've inferred that, oh, this is going to happen,
right.
You know, in other scenarios in my life. You know, so that's a very common one.
Would that also fall into your situation in high school where you felt if I was okay with passing?
Yeah.
That would be the same somewhat?
It was more of she lost her life in a car accident. Therefore, I could potentially. And I ended up having a really bad car accident later on.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, it was like, you know, driving's not safe.
Mm.
You know, this can happen in other scenarios, or this could happen to, you know, a loved one of mine.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
All right, Tian, we have a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. So we like to give our guests the floor for a minute or whatever. Say
anything you want to talk about in terms of like just plugging
any takeaway.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question to help you with this one. You've been doing this for 10 years. Over 10 years, your private practice.
Private practice, 10 years. But
psychology.
I've been licensed since 2005. So it's
there you go.
Been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
So my question to you is with all of this, and there's so much, I mean, the mind is a lot, as we all know. Is there anything that really sticks with you that, like, you learned or you realized that really turned things around or made it go from color or from black and white to color for you?
Yeah, you know, I think about the fact that most worries don't come true. You know, a lot of the worries that we think never really come true. You know, maybe some of them, but a lot of them don't. So we spend a lot of time thinking about, you know, what may happen in our life or what may happen in our relationship. And so, again, you know, I keep on plugging cognitive behavior therapy. All therapies are great. Mm-hmm. You know, let me just say that.
Mm-hmm.
But with CBT, it just broke it down for me. You know, and it and my clients that I worked with really enjoyed it because it just made sense. It was pretty easy to understand. The fact that our thoughts and our moods and our behaviors are all interconnected, mm-hmm. you know, and it's about identifying the maladaptive thoughts that get in our way, that affect our life, and coming up with a more healthier, balanced thought process.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's well said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's perfect. Do you have anything?
No, so basically it's not ignoring them. It's identifying them and then kind of putting them in their place of where.
Right.
In the stacking order. But
right.
To ignore it is kind of not the scenario.
Right.
And then again, don't worry about things that possibly will never happen.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Right. We can try not to worry about things that possibly will never happen.
Not
but
to.
Yeah. It takes practice.
Well,
this is incredible for me.
It was.
Thank you.
It was great.
I'm glad.
It was really, really good.
Awesome. I love hearing thank about you. Negative thoughts in general. Just
because we all have really, them.
Right.
We all have them.
Totally normal.
Yeah.
So we finished the show.
Okay.
The show's done. It's you were awesome. I want to thank you for coming.
On her birthday.
Happy
thank
birthday.
You. Yeah. Aww,
one
thank
last
you.
Time.
Happy
and,
to be here.
we hope to have you again sometime.
Definitely.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. All right. Todd, you got anything?
No. I'm, going to put some of this to practice.
Yep.
Right.
All right. Well, we'll see you. thank you for tuning in. There was a couple of callers, but I didn't get to them.
No, you did not.
Maybe next time. But you guys have a good week. We'll see you next Wednesday. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Power of Love. We are here to provide hope, resources, and a community so no one feels alone in their grief. Support for our Power of Love radio show comes from a variety of generous donors, including supporters from institutions, individuals, and corporations through the D.D. Jackson Foundation. DDJF is a nonprofit 501c3 organization.